So Rakai is trying to teach me the internet. So actually, in preparation, this no joke. In preparation for the show, I have been researching internetisms. What the
hell? He's talking about internet acronyms.
Yeah, whatever. Well, not just acronyms, just things to say, like 65 watt. Like that's my thing this week is 65 watt.
Hate you.
You started this, Rakai. You told me I didn't internet enough.
Yeah, the problem is you're bringing up ones from like 20 years ago.
65 watt?
Let's go deep for a second and let's run around the panel here and ask each other one important question. The question that's on the audience's mind, the forefront of their mind for the last 17 weeks. If any of us grew up with a strict parent, what was their most unreasonable rule from your parents? Like now looking back at it.
Well, I had a super chill mom, so none.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like no words you couldn't say or...
Nope.
Really?
Yeah, well, I could say whatever I wanted.
Well, no wonder you got that beard. Boy, my parents... Boy, I see. Mine was more challenging because I had a divorce, so I had different sets of rules depending on the time of the week. And so it was different things. Like I had to remember which set of rules applied to me.
Yeah, I think it was partly so relaxed because I grew up with a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't want to be too strict.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Noah? Before I reveal mine, what about you?
I had a split. I had one parent was very, very, very strict, very, very regimented, and the other parent was very, very loose, very, very relaxed, very, very reasonable.
Can I take a guess?
Is it really guessing?
The first one was your father and the second one was your mother?
Well, of course. But I mean like I don't feel like that's that impressive. You know me well enough that I feel like you know these things.
Well, I think anybody that has watched your father in the Linux action show might have had an inkling.
That's true. So what, can you think of a rule that dad had?
Oh, yeah. My dad had this thing that he called family time. And family time was from 7 to 8 o'clock. We had to go sit inside of his office and bond as a family. But here's the thing. He always had something that he needed to be doing. So family time was we all sat there in silence while he worked on his laptop for an hour.
No.
And, oh, man, yeah. that is so the opposite of me.
Well, so here's what it eventually evolved. It devolved into family time was Noah did stupid, irritating things to get himself in trouble to get thrown out of family time because he was so sick of sitting there in silence and wasting an hour.
Sure. Yeah, that's of course. You got to get out.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a story I have one time. Curfew was the big rule where I grew up. You got to be home by a certain time. And one night, I didn't make curfew. And I know it's going to make me sound old, but this is before we had cell phones. So I couldn't call dad and tell him I was stuck on the side of the road. And sure enough, my buddy's car broke down, started overheating, and we had to get towed. And then I had to get a ride home. And this added hours of delay. And so I got home. I said, yeah, Dad, I'm really sorry. You know, my buddy's car broke down and it just took. Yeah, right. Bullshit. I told my parents that one when I was your age. There's no way I'm believing that. I'm like, do you want to call him and ask him?
I have the tow receipt, though.
Yeah, he's like, you want to call and ask the guy? He's like, what, so he can lie to my face? No. And I just got in so much trouble. And it was legitimately a breakdown. To this day, I think back on it and go, he didn't give me a fair shake.
you know, it's interesting you bring that up because I'm pretty tolerant when I screwed up as a kid. Like, if I did something wrong, my parents called me out on it. I was like, okay, yep, that's legit. But I would get into a boiling rage like that if they accused me of something that I didn't actually do. And I'd fight it tooth and nail. Like, I know that's hard for a lot of you to believe, but I would not let it go. Like, if you accuse me of something and I didn't do that thing, we're going to talk about it. We'll sit here and rehash this until we get it right. Yeah.
My plan is to bring it out to him in about 5 years and really rub it in his face.
You remember 25 years ago when you told me that I was a liar?
Yeah.
I wasn't a liar.
I've thought about it every day since then, Dad. The other rule that never made sense to me as now somebody who's trying to lose a bit of weight is eat every single scrap of food on your plate.
Oh, God, yes.
Well, the problem is that rule makes sense.
It makes sense.
He's fired up, Rakai.
It makes sense when you have normal portion sizes and not American portion sizes.
Yeah, I mean,
I still disagree.
It's like adults don't really know. Like, we don't have a good way of measuring how much intake kids really need. They're small, little, tiny things.
Your fist, well, that's the size of your stomach.
Exactly.
So if you're making them eat any more food than the size of their fist,
I agree. That is an actual portion size.
And I had to drink all the milk in my cereal. If I got cereal, I had to drink all of the milk.
I think that is a BS rule, and I think that very. Here's the thing. I was at the mall. This is a couple months ago, and I was standing in the mall, and I decided I was going to go get myself a pretzel. So I'm going there to get a pretzel, and I'm standing in line. Here's this mom, and her kid had ordered the large pretzel bites or whatever. So she's sitting there at the pretzel maker eating these large bites, and her mom is telling her, "Hurry up, eat!" And she's like, "I'm full. No, eat. You're going to eat. I paid for the large. You're going to eat the large." Blah blah blah. And then the mother goes on to say, after, you know, 5 minutes of berating this kid, you know, to eat her pretzel bite, she's like, "Hurry up, you're going to miss your appointment at Jenny Craig." And, like, my jaw almost dropped. My tongue fell out of my mouth. I'm like, yes, yes. Yell at your kid to encourage her to finish eating so you can get your whole $2.37, you know, worth of money spent. So then you can go pay Jenny Craig $50 or $100 or whatever it is per appointment to help her lose weight from eating. Like, the level of nonsensical, I just, my brain can't even process that level of illogicality, if that's a word. It just drives me nuts. And we do this in society, right? We force our kids to you know, you're going to clean your plate. You're going to eat your food. I paid for that. You're going to a buffet. You're going to eat. No, that's stupid. You know what? Eat until you're full. And then you're done. And if that means you're full, then you're done. And that's the rule that we've had for our kids. The only thing I won't budge on is, we have a good meal. They get some input on what we're going to eat. Yeah, at the end of the day, where the parents will make the decision. But if they choose not to eat that, there is a very limited selection of food that we'll offer them after that. If they're not hungry, fine, don't eat. But you're not going to come to me in 2 hours and say, "Well, now I want pizza." No. You had your opportunity to eat this. Here are the limited options that are now available to you.
See, that seems to work pretty well for that.
Us. Those are Noah's reasonable parent rules right there.
I don't agree with that, though, because I'm a person that's a grazer, so I eat a little bit here, a little bit there, and if I'm forced to eat a large meal, I usually won't eat all of it, but that doesn't mean I don't want more to eat later.
Well, that's fine. Then put it in the fridge and come back to it. I mean, we don't throw the food out. I mean, their food's still in the fridge, but here's what's not going to happen. If we decide, like, chicken nuggets are a big thing in our house, I could just like chicken nuggets, right? I don't like chicken nuggets. I freaking hate chicken nuggets. But we make chicken nuggets every once in a while because the kids like it. If I go buy chicken nuggets and I make chicken nuggets and then I partake of chicken nuggets, which I don't want to do, and then you sit there across the table from me and say, "I'm not hungry," and really that's code for I want to go back in my room and play Minecraft, and then 3 hours later you're going to come back out and say, "Well, now I want pizza." No, it doesn't work like that.
No, you get more chicken
nuggets that are in the fridge, or you can have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or you could, you know, I mean.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. I can agree with that. I vehemently disagree with the idea of a curfew, by the way.
Of a what?
A curfew?
A curfew.
Wow. Oh, a curfew.
I mean, to some degree, but I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, Chris has been gone for 3 days. I'm sure he'll come home eventually. Like,
well, okay. 3 days, maybe.
Well, I'm just saying, like, so where do you draw the line? Like, I think that's somewhat reasonable. I don't know if I'd make it quite as hard line of, like, 11:01, you're in trouble. At 11, it's fine. Like, I don't know if it'd be quite that strict.
Well, you're talking to somebody that some nights came home at 10 o'clock, other nights didn't come home till 2 in the morning.
Yeah, but you had an agreed upon time, right?
No.
So if you just went missing for a night, like, just no one would notice?
Well, my mom would notice, but she would assume that I stayed at a friend's place, which I usually did.
I'm a pretty lenient parent, but I think at the very least, I would expect a phone call saying,
I agree. You know, a phone call I would agree with, but okay, if you don't get a phone call, then they have legitimate reason to be angry.
Here's the other thing I put my foot down. This has worked so, I mean, he's only in kindergarten, so I guess we'll see how well this scales. But my parenting rules, quote unquote, so far have been, I let him sort of determine bedtime, wake up time until I start to see bad things happening the next day, and then I step in and we do a little bit of a course correction, and if that scales to the level that I'm thinking it's going to scale, I'm perfectly fine if he stays out till 2 a.m. on school nights, as long as the next day his butt is up, he's going to school, and he's doing good work at school. If all those things are happening and he can do that on 5 hours of sleep, more power to
you. Have to think about the context of that too, if that is a symptom or a cause. Because for me, part of the reason I stayed out till 2 a.m. is because I was super overly stressed by school, and it was the only way I could calm down and relax. And a symptom rather than the cause of why it was having trouble in school.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The first thing that there are certain things that, I mean, like if you're having trouble concentrating in school, if you're having trouble, one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to spend less time doing extracurricular things like hanging out at friend's house and more time concentrating on school. Or if we need to, you know, get a counselor involved or something because there's a problem, I'm fine with that. But, you know, an open-ended thing, I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Here's the thing that I think I'm particularly – as a kid, there the amount of times that I got the answer because I said so is just like 90% of my parents' justification for doing anything. And the problem with that was I've always considered myself a fairly reasonable person. So if you explain to me in logic and rationale why it is we're doing these things, I'm perfectly okay with it. It's when there isn't a rational reason and it's just because I decided to do this that I don't really have a lot of that I had a really hard time with it. And so the first thing I did when I turned 18 was I went and moved out of my parents' house and got my own place and lived there and then did all of the things that I've always wanted to do. I stayed up and I'd never been up till midnight because I had this bedtime. It was ridiculous, you know, and I moved out and I went crazy. I was like, I'm going to stay up all night for like 5 nights in a row. And then like to this day, I still have trouble like acclimating to a proper sleep schedule. And I think part of that was this like insane amount of rebellion that happened the second I got out of my, you know, off of this like regimented, you eat at these times, you sleep at these times. Now I don't eat at any of those times and I don't even come close to sleeping at those times. I think that also extends to alcohol use. You know, if you look at other countries, parents sit down with dinner with their kids and they hand them a beer, they have a glass of wine or whatever, and it becomes just part of normal culture. In the U.S., and I saw this happen time and time again in college, and this is coming from somebody who never drank a drop of alcohol the entire time I was in college, you'd have these kids that, you know, they're 17, 18, 19 years old, they come to college campus, and then they quote-unquote pregame, right? And so they'll drink 8 shots, 9 shots, and then they go up because that alcohol has to carry them for the next 6 hours, so they want to do it up right. And it turns into, and we almost teach kids to abuse alcohol because we say you can't touch alcohol in any way, shape, or form until you're 21. By the way, that'll be 4 years after you've already left your parents' house. There is nobody there to guide you through the appropriate consumption of alcohol, the responsible way to consume and enjoy alcohol. It's just a get completely smashed and then go out and party with your friends. And I think that we've done a huge disservice to our kids that way too. It kind of stems from the same thing. This, you know, we have such a tight control until a certain point and then all the controls come off at one time and we expect people not to just spin out and hit the wall.
New Librem laptops have started shipping. Do we care? Okay.
That'll be that segment.
I'm sorry. I didn't. It took me a minute to realize that was a serious question.
Oh, I think they're doing good stuff.
Uh huh.
Really?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I mean, you know. Everybody's got to start somewhere, you know.
Well, here's a pro tip for anyone starting. Trajectory? Anyone starting later, start by not lying. That would be a great first step.
Well, you know, you start with a dream, and then reality comes creeping in, and you can't quite deliver on the dream.
Yeah, I'm
playing devil's advocate.
You know what you do? You go and you figure out what the fuck you can actually deliver before you promise shit.
It's just if you
that would be
to
a
me,
great idea.
Yeah, okay, but, you know, if you came to me today, and you just ignore that, and you came to me today and you said, which Linux hardware vendor is truly pushing the envelope, I'd say, I'm really impressed that Dell is shipping firmware updates via GNOME software. To me, that makes a huge difference as a user of these machines that I can do firmware updates via GNOME software. And then number two, I would say Purism with the Librem line because they're pushing Core Boot on a modern i7 nice-to-use system. And while I don't like the way they look, I don't think they're labeled correctly, physical toggle switches for the webcam, that's kind of lit.
Chris,
lit AF, you might say.
I'm going to stand here right now, and I'm going to offer you a $250,000 a year job where you get a nice fancy office in Seattle and a $1,000 chair. But when you actually get there, what you're going to get is told that you have to actually go to Utah
You're going to give you a wooden chair.
That's your office is about 50 feet by 50 feet, and you're sitting on an orange crate. Oh, and you're only making $25,000 a year.
I just got to say, like, how is there moral compass in the right direction? Okay, you got me there. You got me there. But I'm willing to look back at people. I feel like the Linux hardware vendor space is like super competitive right now, and everybody's scrambling to glom onto the 2% that they can glom onto. And so, if you can come out and say we're the vendor that can ship you an i7 system and we can use Core Boot, that kind of gets my attention, and they're really doing it.
No, I think it's not really super competitive. I think you've got Dell that's eating up the majority of the market space, and then I think you've got everyone else that's fucking things up.
Well, there definitely doesn't seem to be market demand because Lenovo.
No, that's not fair. I don't agree with that.
Well, I mean, look at last week's. In User Air 16, we covered the Phoronix laptop hardware survey, and Lenovo is dominating that, and they don't do shit one to try to make Linux users' life easier.
Yeah, I don't agree with that last assertion, but I agree that I think Librem needs to take a pick. They need to either be the premier Linux hardware vendor, and if they do that, get rid of the hardware switches because they look like butt, and concentrate on just delivering a really high quality product that runs Linux, or do the whole freedoms thing. And if you do that, don't worry about the aluminum case. Don't worry about, 4K resolution, just or whatever, 1080. It doesn't matter anymore. Just deliver a usable computer that completely respects the user's freedom and just make it one step above rebranded ThinkPads, and, you could succeed in that space. But this hybrid approach thing is never going to work.
See, that's why I say all the primarily Linux vendors are fucking things up right now, because they're splitting their attention six different ways, like every single one of them.
Mm. Well, how so?
Well, you've got System76 that's doing the hardware now and the distro and whatever the hell else they're doing.
Building their own, they're starting their own manufacturing process.
Yeah, and then you've got Librem that's trying to do the whole freedom thing and the whole hardware thing. Mm-hmm. And you've got Tuxedo that's also trying to create their own distro and do the hardware thing.
I would actually say it seems to me that Entraware seems to be holding it together the best of that group.
I would agree.
Entraware is just plugging on, trying to make great Ubuntu machines with reasonable defaults and specs. They just don't ship in the U.S., so we don't talk about them as much.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
They seem to be on the right track there. So going back to Noah's point, though, I think the part that I would disagree with, that they should just be the Freedom laptop, or they should be the all-in hyper-performance laptop and try to skip this middle-ground hybrid stuff, totally disagree. I think the reality is the market is a market full of gray space. People are dual-booting Windows and Linux on these machines 30% of the time. People are doing all kinds of stuff that isn't necessarily like a Freedom-approved approach. They just want to use their hardware. And if you look at people that are buying laptops, and we just talked about this last week, the people that are buying laptops are buying them from the store. They're buying Lenovos and Dells. They're loading Linux on them by the vast majority themselves. Almost half of them are dual-booting, less than half of them, but many of them are. And these things, like the most free laptop or the laptop with XYZ, are not factors. These are practical people trying to get practical amounts of work done in the most efficient and most cost-effective method possible. And I don't think that selling to the Richard Stallman loyalist is a market. I'm sorry, everybody out there who wants to buy a Core 2 Duo from 2007 with Core Boot, but I wish I could sit here and tell you that the market gave a shit about you, but the market doesn't even give two shits, let alone a single shit about you, and they're not going to sit here and make a bunch of hardware for you. And so what happens is companies like Purism hear podcasts, and they read blogs, and they follow mailing lists, and they go to community events, and they hear all of these idealists talking about, like Cory Doctorow up on stage telling them about the woes of DRM and proprietary blobs, and they go back on a mission with a vision, and then nobody buys the product. And if you create a gray area product that maybe has proprietary graphics, and maybe it has a couple of proprietary blobs, but it's a really solid, trouble-free machine, and if you decide to put Windows 10 on that shit for some stupid reason, it'll do that just fine as well. That's the more sellable, mass appealing machine. You just look at the hardware surveys, you look at Lenovo's dominance right now in the Linux market. It seems obvious to me.
So I think that would be true if your goal is just to sell laptops, right? I think if your goal is just to enter the PC market space and sell a bunch of laptops and maybe kind of have tangentially, like, I'm going to sell a bunch of laptops and, oh, by the way, I like Linux, so I'll keep that in the back of my mind. I think that's a very reasonable approach. I don't think that's what a lot of these guys are doing, though. I think they're going out with a mission. They're going to accomplish something. And to whatever degree they can succeed, they'll succeed. And I also somewhat disagree with the premise that there isn't a market. I think there is a market. I think it's very small, but I think there is a market. But all that said, I don't really care which way they go. I don't care if they go to the Freedoms market or if they go to the really high end, very polished Linux laptop that, you know, has NVIDIA, has all this stuff. It just, there's no compromises. It's just a really great laptop that runs Linux. I don't care which way they go, but just pick one and do it.
Last.ting.com. This is really how wireless should be. Last.ting.com. You go there, they'll take $25 off a device if you don't have a device. Now, if you have one, and you might because they have CDMA and GSM networks, they'll give you a $25 service credit. That's badass. Ting is simple, easy to understand, wireless. It's $6 for a line, and then just your minutes, your messages, and your megabytes. Average Ting line, about $23 a month. So when I say they're going to give you $25 service credit, just like me when I signed up multiple years ago, I mean, it's more than two, so I'm just going to say multiple. When I signed up multiple years ago, I got $25 in service credit because I brought an Evo 4G WiMAX edition. They gave me $25, paid for more than my first month. Now, multiple years later, still using Ting. I love it. I love the dashboard. The easy-to-understand customer service, super straightforward. If I have something I need immediately, I just call them and they handle it. Otherwise, I just pretty much always get it done using their dashboard. And the CDMA and GSM network means when I'm off in Montana doing that kind of road trip thing, I can pick whatever network is stronger for me on the road.
You know what else is great about Ting? When our crappy-ass Comcast goes down, I still have internet access.
No kidding. There's like no like weird agenda where you have to sign up for like some family share pro. You check the box in your OS.
And it's as much as I use rather than a super high amount of data cap a month.
That's really how it should be. Last.ting.com. I managed to successfully fast from last Thursday's user error to until Tuesday. So,
really?
Monday night. Yeah, Monday night, Tuesday.
Is it like a health thing or just to see if you could do it or what's
both?
The,
yeah, both. It's definitely, okay. There's definitely a lot of health benefits to it.
Okay.
But I was also just curious.
Is it true after you get past the first 24 hours or 30 some hours
way
or something
easier,
that it's like super easy?
Way easier.
Yeah, okay.
And every time I've fasted now, it's been easier. If I don't load up on a ton of sugary stuff the day before and I just eat proteins and veggies and even not like crazy, like I just eat good for the day before, it's so much easier.
You know, I can get behind a lot of your hippy-dippy stuff, but fasting is just not one I believe in.
You think about
it,
though.
Fasting goes back hundreds and hundreds
exactly,
of years, people have
exactly.
been doing
it. It's the most natural thing ever because food availability wasn't like it was hundreds of years ago, and you would go days between really nutritious, like fatty, good protein-high meals. You would go days in between. And so it's only been till we've had access to food like this that we've eaten this much. Imagine, just for a second, if you only ate when it was really good food. So this has been my approach that I've been toying with is, what if I just fast until there's something that's so good it's worth breaking my fast? Like a really good, like I go out to a restaurant and it's a really good meal. Or we make a like really good home-cooked meal. But if it's fast food or if it's something like throwing a hot dog on the barbecue, if it's something like this just not really all that good for me, why not skip it? The human body can go like 60 days without eating as long as you stay up on your potassium intakes, your salts, and your waters, and you don't dehydrate yourself.
I thought it was 3 months before you start seeing negative effects. It's like 3 seconds without oxygen, 3 minutes without, or I don't know, whatever. It's in three days without water.
I've actually on some of the subreddits and forums where people are fasting. There's people right now I'm following that are in 78-day fasts right now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. I think that's what I've always heard.
You know, if you're malnourished, if you're sick, if you have heart conditions, if you're pregnant, you like obviously should not fast. But if you are an overweight, lazy son of a bitch like me, and I'm just talking about me here, who's sitting around using his computer all the time getting carpal tunnel, then it's not going to hurt me to miss a couple of meals. In fact, it's amazing the difference it does to my blood sugar. So typically in the past, I would have to have like a breakfast bar because I have no appetite in the morning. I have to force myself to eat because I get sick. I get like I start getting ready to throw up. I start getting the sweats. I start getting shaky, like I'm having a full on hypoglycemic crash. And I'd have to do something to get myself up out of that just to start my day. And now, since I've been doing this, so the first couple of weeks, I cut out energy drinks. And then a couple of weeks went on, and I fasted for 13 days. And once I nailed 13-hour fast, I went to 16-hour fast. And then once I nailed 16-hour fast, I went to 24-hour fast. And then once I nailed a 24-hour fast, I went to like a 4-day fast. fast, because at that point it was so easy. It was like, well, I'll just keep going until I feel like I need to eat. And then we got to the point where it was like, well, now we're having a company barbecue. I'm going to eat. And in that time, I never once got sick in the morning from like a sugar crash. I never once got any RSI issues. I never once had to loosen my watch band so that way it wasn't like strangling my arm in the afternoon. None of those things that I typically deal with on an average day were there. Plus, I didn't have to waste time to make food. I didn't have to give all of the thought that I normally give to what am I going to have for lunch? What am I going to have for dinner? And I didn't spend any money on food.
I was just going to say, I mean, not to be a cheapskate, but I was like, you know what's going through my mind is, man, I wouldn't have to spend any money that week.
And then what I do is when I do spend money on food, I get really good food and I'm like, yeah, I'll buy the appetizer, I'll do this, and I don't feel guilty about having a little extra food. And the great thing is if I want to, I can stay sort of keto when I'm done fasting. So I could just eat predominantly what I tend to eat is spinach, but I could eat veggies and I can eat protein. And I can stay keto, so if I want to start fasting the next day, my body is still burning predominantly fat instead of glucose, and it is an easy transition to just keep on fasting. Like, it's not like it's hard or anything. It's like, I don't get hungry. I literally don't get hungry. Now, you have been with me. You know that I used to get hangry. Like, I would start to, like, get angry, and you would have to feed me.
You
want to
talk about fries? We could talk about fries. Right? I don't mean the kind that you eat.
All gone. All gone since I've started fasting. I do not get hangry anymore. Like, that's all gone. It's so I don't know how long I'm going to keep it up, but I'm down a few pounds and I feel great. My energy level's been good. So I think I'm just going to keep it up for a bit and just keep reading about it and researching. I've been watching all my YouTube videos, just a shit ton of YouTube videos. All my recommendations on YouTube right now are about fasting and exercising and nutrition. Like, my YouTube recommendations have just been devastated by this recent endeavor of mine, but it feels good. And Hadia's been doing it right along with me. And so, of course, she's a diabetic, so she's monitoring her blood sugar and she's having way better results. Her blood sugar is just essentially staying even all day long, not requiring a bunch of maintenance. It's been a really interesting research process. But it's funny, dude, because Beard's not the only one. It's like, dude, you're crazy. You're fasting? That's crazy. Like, there's people in my family who are, like, legitimately worried about my health. Like, they're worried about me because I'm fasting. And it is so natural. I think we'll look back in a few years, and in more than a few years, maybe in a few generations, and we'll kind of laugh at how unusual fasting seemed to us, because it is a built-in, free, easy way to diet that you want to talk about calorie restriction. There's nothing more restrictive than just not eating and drinking water. Not trying to sell anybody.
I'm too lazy to ever go on a diet, but if I was going to go on a diet, it would be something like fasting, because
the not eating diet.
Well, there's two things. One is, I have, in some respects, I have the most self-control of anyone I've ever met. Like, if I decide, I've never understood people that are like, well, today I'm going to do it, or tomorrow, or starting next week, or starting at the, no, if I decide I want to make a change, I'll just decide. And then once I've made the decision, then I'm stuck on it. I'm one of the most stubborn people out there. I'll just do it. So self-control isn't my problem. So if I just decided tomorrow I'm going to start fasting, that would be it. I just wouldn't eat again until either I die or just make the decision to start eating again. Those would be the two choices. And so I could do it, and then it wouldn't actually require – it wouldn't require any special food. It wouldn't require any special planning. It wouldn't,
right.
I mean, all I –
You don't have to count calories. No.
You just drink a lot of water, right?
Yeah. The reality is the first 24 hours are – especially when it's your first couple of times fasting – are a little rough, because, you know, you're not eating and your body is used to eating at a certain times. And I don't even really eat on a fixed schedule. But I did find myself on day two, like, I'd feel hungry. It wasn't bad, but I'd feel hungry, and I'd look down and go, oh, yeah, I probably would get something to eat if I was out driving around right now. Oh, yeah, okay. And then by day three, not even really a problem.
I feel like...
Okay, how about this? Sorry, go ahead, Rika.
I was going to say, I feel like the problem for me is that for me to start fasting, I think I would have to go on a vacation.
Yes, yes. Because it is. Yeah, that is a good point.
That's where my question was going to come in. Is what do you do to – because I use eating almost as a way of like I break – so for example, that's my break during the day for work is like if I get stressed out with a project, okay, I'm going to go to lunch. And then I kind of relax.
It's your time away.
So what do you do?
It's different for me. The reason I would have to go on a vacation is because whenever I try to take a break from eating so much, within like 12 hours – I'm just a non-functioning person.
Yes. It actually was pretty hard. That's why I did it in a – I did like a 2 or 3 week buildup where at first I got rid of like a lot of sugary things like energy drinks. And then I worked down to building up to like fasting for 13 hours, then 16 hours, then 20 hours because what I found was I had a really short temper around my kids. And so I didn't want that to be an issue because like stuff like say like they were fighting over something really stupid, it would be really frustrating for me because I would have like a low tolerance. And so I realized, okay, that's not working. I got to build it up. Same thing I would think would happen if you're at work. Like stuff that isn't normally frustrating could frustrate you because you have like an extra layer of agitation because you're hungry and your body wants to eat. And in a way, some of your senses become more heightened. Your sense of smell and taste and hearing all become more heightened because your body is searching out food.
You're more easily aggravated.
Yeah, but that does pass after a bit. And so if you can time it just right with workload and stuff like that,
The problem, Chris, is you never let me stop working.
I know. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there, sign up for a free 7-day trial, but more importantly, invest in your mind. It's the one asset you have. As you get older, you realize that your body begins to fall apart, but your mind, it's still sharp as ever. So really, quit working out and work out your mind. That's my personal advice. Just sit there, waste away, and learn. What? I'm sorry? We can't say that? Okay. Okay. All right? Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm going to get sued? Okay. I'm still talking to my... There's still the ad? We're not going to cut this? Okay. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. You go, you sign up. It's a platform to learn more about Linux. You can SSH into servers. You work hands-on with real stuff. Instructor mentoring is available to help you. If you really mess something up, don't worry. It's just a test. What? I'm sorry? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll give... Oh, uh-huh. Okay, I'm trying to do the ad. LinuxAcademy.com. I already said unplugged. 7-day trial. I said that. Yeah, I said the instructor mentoring thing. Okay. All right. Thank you. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there and... Oh, what? Okay. Yeah, I know. I know it's the best place to learn Linux. Listen, I'm trying to... Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I could mention the community. Okay. Community is stacked full of Jupiter Broadcasting members, and that actually matters because they fork the research and studying cards. And the other thing I really like about it and respect as a parent is they have an availability... Oh, what's that? Don't mention the kids. Doesn't play well. People don't like kids. Okay. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. You go there, you sign up for a free 7-day trial, and they have an availability planner. I really like this because I'm really busy with work. And what's that? Yes. Uh-huh. Don't mention that. Okay. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged.
Here's a question for you. Who has a recommendation for a USB charging, like one USB-C charger that I can charge my laptop and then a bunch of other just regular USB cables that I can charge like phones and stuff?
Mm-hmm. So you want like a hub that charges USB-C devices and USB-A devices?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, that is challenging to find. There's a couple out there, but the reason why it's challenging is the industry hasn't really figured out how to deal with the fact that USB-C can carry things like display and networking, and it's it's a per device negotiation that happens. So when you throw a hub in there where you could have storage, Ethernet, display, all hanging off the hub, USB-C doesn't exactly know what to do yet. So there's not a lot of hubs out there that do what you're asking for, but there are some.
I guess I mean hub in the sense of connecting multiple USB-C devices. I mean hub is in like just it spits power out to five.
Well, the problem is nobody makes hubs that just spit power out these days
because of the expectation. But there are some out there that's just like you plug USB power into it and it just gives like 2 volts out to or 2 amps out to the devices and stuff. Those are out there. The reason I'm saying there's not a lot of them is because it's really confusing to consumers. So
you have one?
Well, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I put a link. Like, I'm looking for that except with a USB-C plug on it.
Yeah. Those are out there. Where did I see one? I did see one just recently. Let's see if I can go find it real quick for you. Because I was looking myself because I want to be able to charge like devices on the go and things like that and also charge a laptop.
You know, what's funny. A lot of the USB-C docks have one USB-C and a bunch of USB-A ports.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what he wants, though. So, Noah, take a look at the Belkin USB-IF, and I'll put a link in the show notes, too, for you. This is the device that I was looking at that I think does this. So it's got 2 USB-C ports and 2 USB-A ports, and it does power pass through. Yeah. But it doesn't. I don't know if it does data, which so wouldn't work for folks in the audience that would want data pass through. But I just dropped a link to you, and I'll also put a link to it in the show notes if people want to take a look at it. And it's Belkin, so that's good. You know, I mean, I've owned other Belkin stuff before. It's got two USB-A, two USB-C. It can do 5 gigabits of data transfer, but it doesn't
power it.
Well, it's got a USB cord that a USB-C cord, I think, actually, that comes off the back.
Okay. Oh, yes. I see. Okay, so you plug that into mm-hmm. a USB power brick. I would think that somebody just make a power brick with USB-C on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the other hand, it's nice that it is USB-C because then you can...
You still get like data transfer for like thumb drives and stuff. Yeah. That's kind of what my compromise was. The only thing I don't like about it is it's only 900 milliamps shared across all the devices. Which,
yeah, see, it's not going to work.
If you're charging overnight, it's not bad, but...
Oh, really? See, I have to close it or something, but on my laptop, I'm pretty sure if I don't have a certain amount of wattage or whatever, it just doesn't even recognize there's a charger there.
Yeah, laptops, yeah. Have you, the Anchor has one that's like a single USB-C port right now. Have you seen that one? Like, what good is that going to do you? I don't know, but they have one USB-C type power delivery with 30 watts, but one device. I mean, give me a break. Yeah, I think this is all, funny, exactly. It's all still early days a little bit. But I'll put a link to that in the show notes too, because I really like Anchor stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Here's another one for $80. $80, but I don't think this one has USB-A. Oh, no, this one's a dock that has Ethernet. Nice.
Actually, they have USB-C to USB, whatever, micro USB cable, so even that would work.
Yeah. Anchor also makes...
Here we go. Check this out. This is 45 watts. Oh, perfect. Look at this. This is... Here. 45 watts has two USB-C, 45 watts, so you can...
Oh, yeah.
It specifically says it works with the laptop, and then it has three USB-A's on it.
Yeah, man. So this is the WaveLink, and it does 45 watts.
It's only $21.
I'm going to put that in the show. We'll have a few in the show notes for people to look at. This looks like the best one, though, for what Noah's going for, at least. So you get 2.4 amps on the USB-A ports, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what probably they do on the USB-C, too. It's cut off, but yeah, that'd do the job. Boy, I'm thinking about... You must be thinking what I'm thinking of. Like, how am I going to keep all these devices charged on the way to Montana?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. Just I travel so much. It'd be really nice to have one charger. Since all of my devices charge off of USB cables anyway, it'd be really nice to have one thing. I could just plug all the USB cables in, and then I don't have to punt for multiple power outlets. Because I tell you it's a real pain. You go to a hotel, and you go to crawl into bed, and there's usually only one power outlet available next to you, and it's usually floppy from having things shoved into it so often. So I usually unplug the lamp and plug my stuff in there, but then I've only got one power outlet. So it'd be really nice if I could, I have a little extension cord, splitty thing, but this is even better. Only supports 5 volts, does not support 15 volt 3 amps. Bah!
What are you looking for, 15 volts?
Yeah, well, so the one to charge, the USB-C PD or whatever, which is the charger for like the laptops and stuff, there's three modes it can be in. It can be in 5 volt, 15 volt, or 19 or 20 volt. And on the smaller laptops, it has to be either 15 or 20 volt. On the bigger laptops, it has to be 20 volt. But this doesn't support either.
What about that one I just linked you? Is that because it doesn't? This one doesn't seem to clearly stay.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. 60 watts, 12. Yeah.
Six ports. So it's got two USB-C and then it's got four USB-A, and it's only $30, dude. Again, WaveLink.
I know, I saw that.
There's another WaveLink. So now we got five pretty decent USB-C options, depending on what people need.
It's interesting. I found one. That Anchor doesn't make any for plugging into a wall.
No.
But they do make one that is a car charger.
Yeah, that's nice.
That is three USB-A ports and a USB-C.
I saw that.
I saw that for like $29 or whatever.
Yeah, why don't they make a desktop one, though?
I don't know. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah. It feels early days a little bit, but this one that we just found here looks pretty good, too.
I'm loving it. Everything USB-C I can get my hands on, I'm buying these days.
Yeah.
I have USB-C cords. All my laptop right now is plugged in with a USB-C cable.
Did you hear the good word? There's a sweepstakes afoot. You could enter to win a Dell XPS 13 Developer Edition. That means it runs Linux right here on the User Air Show. Just go to jupiterbroadcasting.com, then click our shows menu and choose User. That's where you find all of the fine productions of the User Air program. And then, in a few short days, we'll be giving away a random lucky enterer. Is that the right word? Enterer? Yeah, I think so. Enterer into the sweepstakes. Now, there is one big caveat, and this is the way these things work.
U.S. residents only. You must be 18 years older. We have more information on the website. Go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/shows. That's where you can enter to win. Stay tuned. You'll be hearing from us if you do win. And this is a great opportunity to enter the sweepstakes for the XPS 13. They're going to build it brand new, spanking fresh, and ship it off to you. If you're the lucky winner, just go to jupiterbroadcasting.com, click on shows, user error, and you'll see the link to fill it out while the sweepstakes is still running. If you're hearing this after the fact, well, I don't know. Maybe stay tuned for future shenanigans.
So a couple months back, I hadn't realized this, but Razer opened up a Linux-specific forum, and they made a Facebook post where they want to make their computers the best Linux computers.
You got to be loving this.
Yeah. I mean, I like Razer hardware, so if everything from Razer works on Linux, I will probably have a Razer Linux laptop.
They're putting feelers out. It's funny. You know, they did this about the time that Noah bought his Lenovo.
Yeah, back in March, I think.
Isn't that about when you got your new rig, Noah?
I think you got it in April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got it in May because I got it at the I actually took possession of it while we were at Linux Fest.
Yeah, so this is sort of a good sign. Like, it's not really clear where they're going, but they're trying to get a feel for how people would use Linux machines and what from them would be a successful Linux product.
Yeah, and it's nice because it's a different kind of hardware vendor from the ones that have delved into Linux before. Like, you've got Dell, who is mostly focused on business machines, but Razer, they're hardcore into the whole gaming segment.
Yeah, they say Razer Insider is always adapting and evolving based on what our community is looking for. We decided to lead a new forum section that is dedicated to Linux applications for gamers and other creators alike. The Linux Corner is a result of where fans can now discuss their experience, provide feedback, and talk about everything related to Tux's OS on the Razer Blade.
Yeah, and there's already a lot of open source software that controls a lot of the Razer stuff. Like, there's Chromatic, I think it's called, that lets you do all the different lighting for your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have seen that. And that is it's an open source project. Yeah, I haven't really dug into it since they announced it, so I'm curious to know how the traction has been. But the thread that they started is super long now. It's a ton of posts. People seem to be actively interested in it. And it's still active, too. People are still posting in that thread as of just recently. People are still talking about there.
Yeah, I hope that they are not just giving lip service and they actually do something with the feedback.
Well, seems to be to a degree the community has come together. So this guy here is talking about his new Razer Stealth 13.3. He says he put Ubuntu GNOME 17.04 on it and everything works. Trackpad, speakers, caps lock, keyboard brightness, sound, Bluetooth, webcam, microphone, Wi-Fi. Speakers didn't actually work at first, but then when he loaded the latest update and then restarted, everything worked fine.
Yeah, the only things I've heard that have been somewhat troublesome are the super advanced on the Razer Blade Pro. They have like a special trackpad that, in addition to being a trackpad, also can do like some kind of display thing. The display part doesn't work for that. And I think on some of the laptops, they have killer wireless Ethernet ports that don't work.
So I am interested to see where it goes. It'll be really interesting. I know that up until this point, what I've heard from a lot of people in the Linux community that have had those computers is they've had a lot of issues, some with the build quality, others with just the getting some things to work on under Linux. So it's really interesting to watch Razer kind of go at that community. And like you said, they're approaching it with a little different perspective of a hardware build, and I think that the same things that make it a really great gaming machine would also make it a really great production machine under Linux. So it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of grab that market as well.
I appreciate the humble approach. I appreciate, like, hey, this is a different little area we're going to dip our toe in, and we're going to have a little humble pie as we do it. And I like that. I think that's a good way to go, because eventually you get, you know, you build a community that wants to help you as an underdog. They want to help you do it right. And so then within a year or two, you've got a really solid product without having to be super flashy and braggy. You know, you come in with some humble pie. You ask the Linux community for their help. A bunch of them, like I'm looking at the Linux Corner forum right now. People are trying everything from the latest Ubuntu's to Slackware and getting all of the little itty bitty things working in between. Like, this is a active community working on this stuff. It's way more than they would have gotten before. And in a year or two, they're going to be able to take all of this and all of these lessons learned and ship a super good product.
Yeah. And they're
maybe even less than 2 years.
They're kind of getting the community to suss out what the issues are for
exactly.
them rather than having to do it themselves.
Yep. I think it's not quite like the Sputnik project, but it's the same thing where another vendor is established in one area and they come at this Linux space with a bit of humble pie and they ask the community for their guidance. It's amazing how often that actually works.
You know, one of the things I always used to enjoy was from time to time I would get random little things showing up on my doorstep as part of the JB Swag thing. Being a Patreon, it was really kind of a cool treat. And well, this week I got something almost even better. In fact, I got access to this brand new secret podcast that nobody knows about, and it's only available to people that are in the Patreon. So if you love all that is good and Linuxy,
and honest,
full of truthiness.
Yes, people who actually care about Linux. Where should they go, Chris?
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. It's a podcast about the network. It's a conversation. It's answering questions of our patrons. It's, I hope, a place to have future conversations with Jupiter Broadcasting hosts that we know only a handful of people will ever listen to. So it's a little more relaxed, even more so than this show.
All right, guys. So we're all adults here, right?
Sure. Mostly.
Not, I pretend.
So since we've been adults, I'd say maybe about 25 or later, what's the thing that has been the most troubling to you to realize?
For me, I'll tell you what it is for me. For me, it's the realization that I have to spend copious amounts of money on things that don't provide me any real pleasure, but they are a requirement for adulting. I'll give you
like insurances
a great
and
example.
Stuff?
Well, that's one example. But I was sitting around. Had a friend. We were having a discussion about how, you know, we went to high school together, and we used to buy all these cool computer toys and all these technology things. And he was talking about how he just bought this brand new $1,400 Honda lawnmower, like walk behind lawnmower, and how great it is, and how the blade replacements and all these cool things. And you know, we really got into it. I was telling about my new steel weed whip that I got, and how, you know, it was like $500, and I was really proud of it, and it had the extended thing. We got it, and then like an hour into the conversation, we both stopped and we're like, when did we turn into these old men that are excited about lawn equipment? Like, it's just, but you realize that if you buy yourself a nice lawnmower, that you spend less time mowing the lawn, and it's easier to mow the lawn. You can be done mowing the lawn sooner. So it is a necessary expense to a certain if you can afford to do so. And, you know, for me, you know, the longer we whip means it's throwing rocks, you know, further away. So I'm not getting hit by rocks and debris and stuff like that. And it starts up every time. And, it, you know, this one doesn't use mixed gas. And so that's, you know, I have a...
Sounds very nice, actually. I'm getting it. I want to buy it now.
But it's a really, really depressing realization.
Yeah. I think mine is that everything changes in a fucking instant. And when you conceptualize life as a child and then as a teenager and then even as an early adult, you think, I'm going to plan this stuff out and I'm going to have foresight before things come down the pipe, and I will be prepared for them financially. I'll be prepared for them mentally. And in the reality, your entire life will change in a moment. And it can be your kid falling off a bed and cutting the side of their face open on the dresser. It can be a conversation with your significant other that is about divorce. It can be a car accident that comes out of nowhere. It's a family member who calls you up that is on their deathbed, and it happens within a fraction of a moment. And from that period forward, nothing is ever the same again. And you can just be going along in life, and then
your entire life changes.
Just bam.
Yeah.
And that's, there's nothing you can do about it. And that's life.
Man, I don't know if I can beat that, actually.
Yeah. Like, it's...
I was going to say that I realized that to be happy in life, you really can't do it without taking a whole lot of risks.
Yeah, you gotta proportionally put in to get proportionally out.
Yeah, because life feels like it is set up such that you do things that you don't like so that you have money to do things that you do like. But I feel like I can make money doing things that I like, but that's always, to me at least, the alternative road where you have to risk a lot of stuff to be able to get to a place where you can actually
and
do
often
it.
Work a lot harder.
Yeah.
Too, depending.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree that you have to risk a lot. I definitely agree that it requires a ton of work.
There are times, I mean, you've risked a lot.
It depends
where you're
on the path
too.
You take.
Like, yeah. I mean, there's been definitely, there's got to have been moments early in AltaSpeed where there were some serious rolls of the dice.
This I quit my job in November of 2009. I put in my notice November 2009. I founded the company of AltaSpeed in December 2009, and didn't have a single client. Ended up paying $280 at the end of the year to tell the government that I didn't make any money. In February of 2010, we found out we were pregnant with our first kid. So I had – and this is – I hadn't – a dollar had not come in. I did not make a dollar to my name. And I would never recommend anyone else do this ever again. In fact, anytime anyone ever asks me, I always tell them, get the boat as close to the dock as you can, then make the jump so you don't wind up in the water. Because I got lucky. It's not luck. It's a lot of hard work and preparation, which met opportunity. But yeah, January, February, March, I don't think we started taking money until about April. And then, you know, it obviously took off eventually. But yeah, there was the first couple months I was like, I have a kid on the way. And what did I just do? What the heck did I just do?
Yeah, sounds like a huge risk to me.
It was. I mean, and somewhat in my defense, in December when I made the decision, I didn't know that we were, you know, pregnant. So that may have definitely altered the course had I known that at the time. But
that's,
you know,
another
whatever.
Thing. Like, a lot of stuff has hidden risks that you don't realize until you're halfway down that path.
Yep.
So, Chris, I'm thinking about quitting JB and becoming a full-time Twitch person.
It's bound to happen. Is this like a two-month plan or like a six-month plan?
I'm doing it right now.
Well, I can't deny that Twitch does seem like the best obvious route if I was going to start over again to make content.
Yeah, remember earlier when we were talking about huge risks where...
I mean, geez, though. But you know what, though, Rika? It's perfect in a way. Because with Twitch streaming, you just sit down, you start streaming, and every minute you put in immediately equates to content going out.
And I'm doing something that I actually super really enjoy.
I got to say, like, it seems like it would be the podcasting of the future in a
and
sense.
And the best part of it is you get immediate audience feedback. Which is something you don't get with podcasting.
It's like everything that's great about a live show, but like built into the platform.
Yeah. But in reality, I am not quitting JB. I would, in the long term, like to shift away from editing and be more of a host. And that would allow me to have more flexibility to do Twitch. But that all also requires me to do well on Twitch.
You've been pretty much streaming almost every day since our last episode. Almost.
3-4 times a week. Yeah.
So how's that going?
Good. I am now a Twitch affiliate.
Hey, congrats!
Which means that people can go over to my Twitch over at rec.net, and they can subscribe to me if they like.
So they just search for Rekai LP?
No, you just go to rekd.net, and it'll take you directly to my Twitch page.
Oh, look at you with the domain name. Really?
Yeah.
That's a good... How did you get that?
I've had that for years.
You clever boy. What the heck is this? What the heck is this?
Did you spell it wrong, Chris?
R-E-K?
R-E-K-D.
Oh, wrecked. Okay. No, yes. Okay. Well, don't go to REK. Go to REKD then.
And
that's nice. That's good, though.
Something that Noah didn't realize is that if you have Amazon Prime, you can link it to your Twitch account. And, I'm hosting someone else right now. That's why it's playing a video. You can link it to your Twitch account, and you will get a free credit that you can use to subscribe to anyone you want. So if you want to support me and you happen to have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch and sub to me for free.
Wow.
Yeah.
You get one free sub?
Yep, per month.
Dude, Amazon, I feel like since they bought Twitch, they've taken it from something that's just for gamers and they're creating a platform for people that want to create a new kind of content. One of my favorite...
They've expanded so far out of gaming. Now they have categories for like cooking and
talk shows.
In real life.
Yeah, two of my favorite YouTubers now host like frequent podcasts on Twitch.
It's kind of interesting because back in the day, Twitch came from Justin TV, and they shut down Justin TV.
Right.
And Justin TV, that was like stream whatever you want.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of going back in that direction, with a much solider base.
Yeah, we were talking like, why isn't JB on Twitch? And it's like, well, really, when we set up the live stream infrastructure, they were banning people for non-gaming related content. Now that's just not even a worry anymore.
Yeah, so maybe in the future you'll see us in the talk show section.
Yeah,